Great to have you with us on Wisconsin Public Radio News. Larry Mueller here, and today we are broadcasting live from Fall Creek, Wisconsin, talking with some, we have a great audience here. The place is packed at the Wise Nature Center at the Beaver Creek Reserve, a wonderful place, and we're going to learn a lot more about it as we talk with our guest today. One of them is Eric Keisler. Eric is the Reserve Executive Director. Eric, welcome to the show.
Long-time listener, first-time speaker. It's exciting.
And Megan Giesler, another of our guests, is one of the naturalists here and is the Butterfly House Coordinator. And great to have you with us, Megan.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And third, last but not least, Jeanette Kelly, who is the Citizen Science and Education Director at the Reserve. She told me she's a big fan of Scott Craven.
It is true. It is true. My favorite professor.
Her favorite professor. Anyway, Jeanette, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining in today.
Thanks for coming, Larry. Appreciate it.
So as we talk with our experts today, I hope you'll join in. Here in the audience, you can just raise your hand, and Jill Nadeau, our producer, will be running around with a microphone, and raise your hand, and she will find you. However, if you're not here and you're listening online or on the radio, you can just call in with your questions. You ever wonder what about the plants and animals that the Beaver Creek Reserve call home? Maybe you have a reserve of your own that you want to talk about in your area. Maybe you have other questions about butterflies. We got a butterfly expert with a big smile on her face right now.
Oh, yeah.
We can talk about birds. We can talk about a lot of things. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Well, I got a tour of the center here, and I was amazed. Maybe talk a bit about what all you can do at the Beaver Creek Reserve.
That's a big question, Larry.
Yes, it is.
That's a big question. So Beaver Creek has been around for over 75 years, and this nature center was built in 84 and then added on in 93, and really was a hub for field trips for many years. In the last 3 decades, most people had their sixth grade overnight in the youth camp across the road. And many people learned about a lot of conservation and ecological topics. Many people also had their first kiss behind one of the cabins across the road. But we've been a hub for about a 90-mile radius for field trips over the last 12 years that I've been here, for sure. And then we do summer camps as well in the summer. We've actually gotten a partnership with our local 5 school districts, and we run a summer school through Beaver Creek, and those students get to come to these summer camps for free. We also have transportation from Altoona and Eau Claire to bring students out to Beaver Creek, so they get to no cost and free transportation to learn about butterflies, kayaking, reptiles, all sorts of great topics that we teach about here at Beaver Creek. And then we rent out equipment. So we rent out kayaks, we rent out snowshoes, cross-country skis. We're the place where a lot of people cut their teeth on environmental outdoor recreation tasks. And so there really is 365 days a year of topics that we cover, and we try to be almost a nature center, but a community center. There's a group that does quilting. There's a group that does watercolor. We have an astronomy club that utilizes the facility. So from the stars to under your feet, right? We're doing just about everything.
And Megan, what kinds of animals call this place home?
Oh, I mean, there's so many that you could think of. You know, I love butterflies, so I'm going to talk about that a lot. But we, you know, in Wisconsin, we have over 150 butterfly species. We see a lot of them here at the reserve in the Chippewa Valley. We also have lots and types of mammals as well. We have bears in the area. I have not seen one yet, but I know that we have them in the area. But, you know, we see a lot of mammals such as coyotes, wolves, and then a large bird species as well. Jeanette could talk more about that piece, but lots of bird species as well.
How did you become, well, I ask this of all of you, how did you become working here?
Yeah.
Come to work here?
That's a great question. I went to school at Stevens Point and studied environmental education and interpretation and have done a lot of seasonal work all around the Midwest. I've worked for the Minnesota DNR, worked for UW Extension, and then ended up coming here and stayed here. I love it so much.
Yeah. Jeanette, what about you?
Well, I was initially looking to come to this area actually because I was getting married and my husband was over in this area. But before I came here, actually, someone who had volunteered for me talked a lot about Beaver Creek. They were from this area and used to tell me about Beaver Creek Reserve. And so when I moved over here, I actually started volunteering here. And then when my predecessor was leaving, she came to me and said, "Get your resume ready." And I did. And here I am.
And Eric, what about you?
Yeah, I graduated from UMD with an outdoor rec degree that had a lot of environmental education facets to it, and I grew up in Eau Claire. This was my nature center. I've been coming here for my whole 43 years.
You got your first kiss here?
Yeah.
Let's get into some detail on that.
I don't see Katie here, so I think
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my wife, I met up at the Y camp. I worked at a Boy Scout camp. I worked and ran an outdoor program for Michigan Tech up in the UP. And so all of that young professional skills really kind of
came
played.
Came before here.
Yeah,
for
you.
Sure. I grew up on a 360-acre farm, so I kind of have, I was on every acre of that land. And so when I hear 400 acres, I've got a sense for the size of the whole center, of the whole reserve, a huge amount.
Yeah, and Beaver Creek is in a special place in Wisconsin, right? We're in this transition area from the southern, you know, kind of open prairie, historically farm fields to the south, and the boreal forest, you know, the pine barrens to the north. So we get, you know, unique butterflies. We get unique birds that Jeanette and Megan can talk about. But this is a really special and unique area in Wisconsin. And the visitors and volunteers and members are all very passionate about the different things that you can find here at Beaver Creek and on these 400 acres in the whole county.
How is it all funded?
Great question. So this is your nature center. This is Eau Claire County facilities. These are buildings and land owned by Eau Claire County. All of the staff that are here talking today are friends of Beaver Creek Reserve, and we have a public-private partnership with the Eau Claire County in a 10-year contract, and that has been a very unique model. It's an extremely successful model, but even in the country, most friends of organizations help the friends of Yellowstone National Park, right? They're not the ones that end up taking over the responsibility of running it all. And this is a small budget, but a relatively large facility. And so we leverage volunteers and donations. And because we've been around for 75 years, we have a lot of really great neighbors, a lot of really great partners, very dedicated board, staff. So it's really fun to be a friend of so many people and the director at Beaver Creek.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeanette Kelly, Megan Gafer, and Eric Keisler, our guests today as we talk about the Beaver Creek Reserve and about the Nature Center itself. And you can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. Maybe you have a question about the reserve, or maybe you just have a naturalist type question. Amy in Door County, as a matter of fact, online. Let's go there. Hi, Amy.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Hi, I have a question about monarch butterflies. Two questions. One is that I heard a year or two ago that those folks who had been raising the caterpillars inside to release them out into the environment once they were hatched from their chrysalis, I heard that scientists discovered that wasn't actually working out that great for the butterflies. I'm looking for confirmation or the story behind that. And then number two is my comment, which is so far this year, I haven't really seen that many monarchs, and nor have I seen one single egg on my milkweed plants. Any comments about that?
No, these are great questions. I'm going to start off with your first one. You know, that's a balance that we are looking at as well. But something to go along with that, with raising monarchs, there are people that do it in the wrong way. They are putting them in really small containers, or they are just putting as many as they can in, or they're not cleaning their spaces. They're a living thing, so they are going to need to be cleaned every single day. They need fresh food every single day. We here at the reserve, we do raise monarch caterpillars, but we have a very strict system on how we do it. We are cleaning out our buckets with a diluted bleach system to avoid bacteria, disease, and we're getting fresh food every single day. And we do see things that happen, but a lot of this stuff also happens out in nature as well. So making sure you do it the right way. We also see a lot of people that purchase their butterflies or caterpillars online as well, and we really want to discourage people to do that, because that's actually a really big reason why we see a lot of disease happening in monarch caterpillars as well. There's a lot of unknowns out there with that, but one thing I can say is, you know, like any type of animal that you have, making sure that you're taking care of it, making sure that it's clean, it has fresh food, you know, that's the first way to start, and then also not putting so many in a container as well. Here at the reserve, we only put 6 in a container, as we contain that container as well, and so we're always monitoring it. We have volunteers, lovely volunteers that come in every single day to take care of them. But that's just something that I recommend people doing, making sure that you're monitoring them and taking care of them, and don't buy them online.
there we go. That's a great answer, Megan. Thank you so much. And Amy, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. You could join in too, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. I want to talk about, you were just giving us a little education there. I want to talk about education, the programs. Jeanette, you have a myriad of educational opportunities. Tell us about those opportunities that are available around the reserve.
As you said, we do have a myriad of opportunities, and Eric touched on the opportunities for youth, but I definitely want to make sure to point out that we have opportunities for all ages and adults as well. And I'm always very proud to tell people that we educate from birth to I had a 100-plus-year-old gentleman in one of my programs one day, so we cover all ages. And we do programming both that from the naturalist and from some of our educators here at Beaver Creek Reserve, but we also have other people that come in and do education programs, because I hate to say it, but we don't know it all. And there are definitely experts out there with information that we don't have. So we do draw experts in from other areas to share on topics, whether that's with reptiles, spiders, moss lichens. Those are some of the really interesting ones I think that we've had, where we've had professors or other experts come in. So we can talk about different species, or we have done nature art related programs. We have done training we have a bee club and maple syruping that we have volunteers for, like Megan said, working in the butterfly house. Lots of different trainings we offer to have people involved in conservation projects and citizen science projects as well. So really, any topic you can think of, we've probably discussed here at Beaver Creek, and we either taught or trained people about, or if you have suggestions, we are always looking for suggestions of new topics to bring in here as well.
Jeanette Kelly, Megan Giefer, and Eric Keisler, our guests today, as we talk about what's going on at the Wise Nature Center and at the Beaver Creek Reserve. I'm Larry Mueller. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, having some fun today in Fall Creek, Wisconsin, taking in the natural beauty of this area at the Beaver Creek Reserve, and hearing about what's going on at the reserve and the Nature Center here. It's just wonderful to be able to talk with Jeanette Kelly, Megan Giefer, and Eric Keisler. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. We didn't get, I think I kind of forgot to follow up on the question from Amy, the earlier caller, who wondered about monarch numbers this year, Megan.
Unfortunately, they are pretty low. That's just something that we're seeing. I didn't see my first monarch this year until middle of June, which is very unusual because we typically will see them be kind of at the end of May, be middle of May, but this year is very unusual, and I've probably seen maybe 15 out in the wild this year. So it's a very low number. We look at our numbers, we go on Monarch Watch. It's something that everyone can access. That's how we figure out our overwintering population numbers. So this is numbers of monarchs that are found in Mexico. And last year's numbers, this year it's half that. So it's it's just going down and down more and more. And so it's very sad to see, you know, but I think what we have is we have a lot of people who are very interested in keeping and wanting to raise that number up. And that's honestly the best thing that we need people to do.
Yeah.
But that, you know, there's lots of factors that come into play. It's chemicals and habitat loss and losing of their host plant. And so there's so many factors that come into place that there's not just one singular one. So.
Go ahead, Eric.
One of the things that we strive to do at Beaver Creek, and it's difficult with all the challenges that come across from Mother Nature, but we also try to offer a solution when possible, right? So we do sell a monarch raising kit, and there are instructions on how to do it correctly. So that is available here at Beaver Creek. But we also have a very successful native plant sale. And so the habitat that Megan's talking about, the only way that these butterflies, and I think that's why it's so special that we have a butterfly house and Megan and all the other volunteers that she trains are so successful in teaching this, that each butterfly has its own host plant, right? When I was a kid, I just poked a bunch of holes in the top of a Skippy jar and stuck some grass in there and thought I was raising a butterfly. And we've learned so much since then, right? And so having a native plant sale where, again, it's run by volunteers and we put out 4,000 to 5,000 native plants into this community every year based on those efforts, also provides habitat for all of these butterflies. And so that, you know, monarchs use milkweed, and milkweed was a noxious plant for so many years in so many communities, it wasn't even allowed to be grown, right? So getting that plant into our backyards, into our public parks, and, you know, providing these pollinator gardens is really a big deal and another way that we can be champions for those butterflies outside of just here at Beaver Creek and in your own backyards.
I just yesterday, before coming up, as a matter of fact, I looked out my yard at my native plant area, and there was a monarch, and it was the first one I'd seen.
That's great.
this year, and I thought, wow. When I'm just thinking about coming up here, that I see a monarch, it was it made me feel pretty darn good. We have John emailed us and wonders. Whoops, I'm looking at a screen here, and I just goofed up here a little bit. Oh, can you talk a little about the event being held by JNR Aquatic Animal Rescue at the Beaver Creek Reserve? That's John, an email from John. Jeanette, is that in your bailiwick?
It is. With our aquatic invasive species side of the Citizen Science Center, that is a program that we've been involved with. I think this will be our third year. And it is with JR Aquatics, and it is essentially a pet surrender if you have any non-native species that, I don't even know if it has to be non-native, but I think... there's certain species they don't take, but if you happen to, you know, get a snake or an exotic fish or exotic turtle or exotic lizard, you know, a big bearded dragon, and now 15 years later, you're like, this was not the best decision I ever made.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last thing we want to do for the sake of those animals and the sake of our environment is to let them go, especially in north central Wisconsin, because a lot of them will not survive. And so instead of doing something like that, we partner with this organization to help find them a better place to live for the rest of their days. And it's a really neat program, and you can just bring your animals here. People will bring bring the containers that they keep them in, the terrariums, the aquariums, different things like that, and surrender their animals here. And it's a hard thing for a lot of people, Larry. A lot of people are not just wanting to rid of these animals, but for a lot of people, these have been their companions for a lot of years. And there are tears shed when people are giving up their animal, but they realize they can't, they're not in a situation to have it anymore. They're moving into a different facility. They can't transport it. It's too big for them. And so it's a pretty fabulous partnership. So those animals don't have a cruel life just being let go. And so we don't introduce them into our native system.
Do you actually have quite a few people bringing them in?
We do. We've had chinchillas, dragons, bearded dragons, different types of snakes, fish, birds. A lot of those birds live a long time. People bring in birds, all kinds of different animals. And yeah, each year we've had a fair number of animals donated.
And when does that happen? That's in...
That is coming up soon, in August. August 24th, it'll be here at Beaver Creek Reserve. So definitely check our website or give a call and stop on in if you have an animal. And just to let everyone know, there is no judgment involved in this. The goal of this program is just to make sure that these animals get a good life for the rest of their years and to help people out that are looking to move those animals onto a new place.
Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Our live audience, some member has a question, raise your hand, and Jill Nadeau, our executive producer, will be there lickety-split with a microphone. Bill in Minon called, couldn't stay with us. He's wondered about or worried about townships and counties that mow down the milkweed and in the ditches. It says that's affecting the population of monarchs and other pollinators or feels that's the case. And what can be done to help in that situation?
Well, there's another education. It's a soapbox to stand on.
I know.
Go, Jeanette.
I'm not even sure if I'm necessarily the best one to handle this, but this is one of my own personal beefs, and I try not to make it necessarily widely known in my own neighborhood, at least not too overly subtle about it. But yeah, I think that's a massive issue. And I moved to Eau Claire 12 years ago. And where I live in Seymour Township, and that area has some of the most beautiful roadsides I have ever seen anywhere in this state. And we have such sandy soil and native plants. When Eric's talking about the native plant sale, there is a plethora of native plants that grow along the roadsides in this area. And in the 12 years I've lived here, I have literally watched butterfly weed, prairie bush clover, cardinal flower, liatris just be mowed down. And it's either for development or it's just clearing space, or it's people thinking, feeling that mowed grass is better than what's there naturally in the wildflowers. And I know myself and our retired naturalist, Jim, we live in the same area, and we used to walk our neighborhood collecting monarchs for the butterfly house here. And it used to be you could just walk outside your house down the road. Now you have to walk a mile and a half down the road to even find milkweed, to find a caterpillar on it. So just a thought for yourself and your own personal space. Mowing grass takes your time, it takes your money, it takes fuel, and if you just let it go back to native plants, it's pretty amazing. I have a ditch in front of my yard that we haven't mowed in 12 years, and you'd be welcome to drive by my house and see how tall the cup plants are right now, and the liatris blooming, and the echinacea, and the butterfly weed. And I will say that 3 years ago, a creamy gentian showed up in my ditch, and I don't know how it got there, whether it was just in the seed bank or what, but at the time that was listed as a threatened plant in Wisconsin. So how cool is that? I just stopped mowing, and look what happened.
But what happened to your exercise? You're not getting it right.
Well, Larry, I have a dog, and I have two young kids, so...
Oh, my gosh. Let's take a call from Jan in Middleton. Jan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks. I'm wondering, out in front of our business, there is a lot of milkweed, some of which in one area has a shiny surface on the milkweed, and I think it has something to do with aphids, but I'm not sure. Could you tell me what that is?
You are exactly right. That's what it is. It is aphids. We see it here at Beaver Creek. We see it here in the butterfly house. It's just something that, you know, that nature comes and is kind of a pest that we see with some of our plants. You know, the best way that I, and a more natural way that I've been able to kind of remove them, because, you know, it kind of doesn't make your plants look very nice. And so I use a spray bottle with some water and some, just a little bit of dish soap, and you keep, and you continue to spray that on your plants that have the aphids. And that should, if you continue to do it, that should, within a week to 2 weeks, it should remove them. But that's a very safe, natural way, and it shouldn't harm any of the other insects that are wanting to use that plant. But we do see that here, too. It's just something common that we find here, especially in the butterfly house.
And yeah. Megan, I have noticed, and maybe you know about this, but I have noticed that if my milkweed has aphids on it and that sticky, shiny material substance she's talking about, I notice that monarchs don't seem to lay their eggs on those. Is that what you know as well?
I typically don't see them lay their eggs. Sometimes I'll see the caterpillars on that piece, but usually they'll go to a better piece. Another way to remove that and get rid of that leaf is, it is okay to take a snipping tool and snip the tops of your milkweed. That will encourage growth, and it will actually end up having two more shoots that will shoot at the top. We really encourage this, especially for our monarch caterpillars, that we continue having fresh milkweed throughout the summer as well. So if you have milkweed at home and you see that, you know, either you can use a Donger soap method or you can just snip it, because it will grow back and it will come back even more beautiful.
All right. Very good questions there, and good responses. I want to talk about, go back to Jeanette for a bit to talk about some of the citizen science projects that you have going. There are a bunch of them.
There are, and I've always said that one of the most exciting parts of my job as a citizen science director is that I am constantly learning new things, and I bet I have worked on over 36 different projects since I've been here. And I also say that that's the most exciting part, but that's also the most challenging part, is I'm always learning something new. And the citizen science projects we have at Beaver Creek, just to explain that, step back a second. So what citizen science means is that any of you here in the room or any of you listening on the radio, if you are interested in being part of science and being part of some conservation efforts to help our surrounding areas and our animals worldwide, you can get involved with one of our projects. And it doesn't mean you have to know anything about birds, butterflies, freshwater mussels, bats, fireflies. You just have to have an interest and a desire to learn about them. And you come and see us at the Citizen Science Center. We will train you, we will educate you, and we will let you know the way to become part of these larger projects and to help contribute to science and conservation. And so through the years, we've worked on freshwater mussels, fireflies, Karner blue butterflies, birds, kestrels, owls. We've worked on non-native species, both terrestrial and aquatics, aquatic invertebrates. We really have a gamut of things that we have learned about. And one thing that is very cool is that several of our citizen science projects have been 100% started and run by our amazing volunteers. And to me, that's citizen science coming full circle, when the public is coming to us and saying, hey, you know what, Jeanette, we are concerned about solitary bees. We are concerned about frogs. We are concerned about this. I think we should look into it. And that's where a project starts. That's pretty phenomenal.
There's one. You have one involving bats, do you not?
We do. We work with the Wisconsin DNR to help monitor bats throughout the state. And we have a cool little gizmo called an Anabat, and you can borrow it from us, and you can go on a hike, you can go on a bike ride, you can go out on your pontoon boat, just please invite me along, and you can go out and survey bats in the evening time. It's a really cool part project to get you out at night when a lot of us aren't out at night, just enjoying and learning about what's out there at nature in nature. And you just walk around with this little handheld instrument, and it records the echolocation of the bats, and it can identify the bats. So on the Anabat, it'll tell you what species and how many of that species you're seeing, and then all that information we share back with Wisconsin DNR in their bat monitoring program. And bats,
that is
like,
really cool.
It's very cool. It's super fun, and it's a great entertainment for all ages. And it's definitely a concern because, like our butterflies, our bats are not doing really well either. So it's definitely something that conservationists are interested and concerned about.
Last year, my daughter had an internship with the DNR and did water surveying and fish surveying in streams and rivers across Wisconsin. So she had a kind of a fun summer. And I know that there's some water sampling and testing going on here as well. Describe that.
Yeah, so through our Aquatic Invasive Species section of our Citizen Science Center, we have a couple different projects. We have Citizen Lake Monitoring Network, which is, again, a program with the DNR that we host here as well. And that's looking at clarity of water. It's also looking at invasive species that might be in there, both plants or animals. And in some cases, it's also doing some amount of chemistry on the water just to see where the water's at. And those that's, again, a project that you can get involved with here at Beaver Creek, and just to help make sure that your lakes are doing well. There's also, Beaver Creek doesn't have this program here anymore, but we did for a lot of years, and you can still get involved with it through the Extension. UW Extension is the Water Action Volunteers, which if you're on a river or a stream, that's a similar program to help monitor your stream and make sure your stream is healthy.
How does the information that's collected get used? Can you give me an example of a good use and how things kind of worked out?
Yeah, that's a great question because a lot of volunteers want to know that. Well, I'm out here doing all this work. Is it just because it's really fun, or is it because it's actually making a difference? And we strive to make sure that the citizen science projects we have and that we have people participate in are actually making a difference. So depending on the project, that information is always being shared with a larger organization. So for instance, the programs we work on with partnership with the DNR, for instance, the bat, that goes back to the bat biologist in the state. And so they have all that information. Because the beauty of citizen science is, if you think about it, one person covering a multi-county area can't look at everything and can't keep track and monitor everything. So they're dependent on folks like myself and all of you to help bring in that information. And so that's where they're going to get all their information about bats. Otherwise, they're never going to know about bats across the state. A lot of our bird information, I should say all of our bird information, that gets shared with the Bird Banding Lab, which is out in Maryland with the federal government. And anyone can access that data. And so, Larry, we've had several grad students and PhD students that have contacted us or contacted the Bird Banding Lab for information on whatever species they are studying. Recently, we had a graduate student that was very interested in American kestrels, a small raptor, and they utilized all of our information we have from 15 years of studying kestrels and were able to determine their nesting success and what are potential failures of their nesting and how we can work to change those issues and help with the conservation of them. Mm. So we partner with a lot of different organizations. And even if it's individual organizations like the American Kestrel Partnership, we share our data with them, but then we also share it with the big bird banding data site out in Maryland.
John was showing me, I was getting a tour of the facility, and I saw the bird feeding setup, which, boy, I wish I had something like that. Although it would be a very time consuming, because there's a lot of feeders there, but there was also a net.
Oh, was there a net out there for trapping birds? Sure. Yeah, so we do trap and band birds here at Beaver Creek. We have been trapping and banding birds for 25 years, approximately. And a lot of that data, the information we gain from that is, as I said, shared with different organizations and with the federal government. And we learn things as far as migration patterns, longevity of birds, birds that are breeding. If we see suddenly, Megan was talking about the lack of monarchs, if all of a sudden we don't see any chickadees, well, then we can say, hey, something's happening with the chickadees. And we've learned really cool information throughout the banding program. For many years, we here at Beaver Creek Reserve upped the record of longevity for a white-breasted nuthatch, which might not seem like a big deal, but hey, it's a big deal. So prior to that, they knew a nuthatch could live, say, 6 years and 7 months, and then we happened to catch a nuthatch that had been banded when it was first hatched, and we then found out that bird could actually live to 6 years and 9 months.
And, beat them by 2 months.
Right, but you know, think about that here. We have a group of volunteers that are part of this science, and right here in Little Fall Creek, look how we are contributing to that larger scientific community. And I will say, someone now has caught an older white-breasted nuthatch than us. But we have had birds that have been recovered. We had a rose-breasted grosbeak a few years ago recovered in Nicaragua. So the bird that were at our feeders here at Beaver Creek went and wintered in Nicaragua. We had an indigo bunting that we banded one summer and then didn't see for 6 years. And all of a sudden it showed back up. What the heck had he been doing? Where had he been? And all of a sudden he comes right back to our feeders. So we're learning about migration, about longevity. That bird had migrated back and forth all those years and it survived. We learn a wealth of information through bird banding.
Barbara in Cross Plains has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Barbara.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you all for telling us all these wonderful facts and fun things to do. My husband and I are 78. He started using a cane, and now we're definitely out with our walking stick when we want to explore nature. How much can we see and do if we have those limitations?
Great question. So Beaver Creek, again, is sitting on the shoulders of so many great things, right? We've all been here for 12, 13 years, and that banding data has been here for 20. We have great inputs from all the different community and have other people who have mobility issues. And one of our staff reached out and got a partnership and figured out how to get a tracked wheelchair. And so our local ADRC county group helped us get a track chair, and we're able to work with a local Eagle Scout from the local Boy Scout troop, and he made some of our access points down our trails to be safe enough to bring the track chair down into the floodplain forest along Beaver Creek. And so you can actually go out in a miniature tank. It's incredibly stable and is as fast as able-bodied people can walk. And we have 400 acres that you can explore, right? And all these wonderful things that Megan and Jeanette have been talking about, you'd be able to see firsthand. So we're very prideful of that. We also have an improved service trail that allows people to walk past the youth nature nooks that kids can come and play on, and it goes past the butterfly house. We also have we can use that mobile chair. We have an elevator that can get you down. There's some more solid surfaces as well as some of the more remote trails. So there's opportunities for every age demographic, like Jeanette was saying, from 100 to 1. We want to be here for people. Our mission is connecting people with nature. And again, if we didn't have these great partnerships in our community, we wouldn't be able to connect as many people as we do. And so as we continue to look at the facility and make improvements, we've been upgrading our trails where we can to be ADA compliant, and there's been a lot of forethought here from the generations of people before who have made a lot of those improvements. So again, it's just an ongoing effort here at Beaver Creek to embrace all different mobility types, peoples, and we want to make sure that everybody feels welcome here.
And you have an elevator in the building here to get people from one floor to the next. Mm-hmm. So the building itself is also great for anyone to travel through. Jeanette Kelly, Megan Giefer, and Eric Keisler are guests today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're broadcasting live today from the Beaver Creek Museum, but it's not a museum. It's a reserve, although there are some lovely mounts and what might be considered museum pieces when it comes to wildlife here in the facility. Great to have Jeanette Kelly, Megan Giefer, and Eric Eisler as our guests today. And you can join in with your questions and comments, and we have a question from our live audience.
Yes, I just wanted to ask about the Hobbs Observatory and how do you use it?
Yeah, this was kind of a surprise to me. I don't know why, but man, there's even an observatory here.
Beaver Creek is, again, blessed with so many community connections, and a professor from UW-Eau Claire helped get that observatory in place back in the 1980s. And so we've had over 40 years of astronomers, hobbyists, and people just interested in celestial activities, right, happening here at Beaver Creek Reserve. And so that's open to the public from May to October on Saturday evenings from 9 to about midnight. And we have a very dedicated group called the Chippewa Valley Astronomy Society who volunteers their time so that the public can see these, I mean, huge telescopes that are actually owned by the university, as well as their own, like, hobbyist scopes that are almost, the technology has come along in the last 40 years where you can almost see better from this telescope that they'll bring out from their own trailers and they're connected to an iPod, and then they know the Greek mythology and all the constellations, and you can, you know, I can't tell you how many times here at Beaver Creek there are epiphany moments, right, that just happen that people are just wowed by. But when you see literally the rings around Saturn, right, and to this group, they're looking at double nebula, you know, things, smudges in the thing. I don't even know what they are. They're so talented and have so many great things that they're tracking and watching. But that is a great resource. And Larry, there are not many nature centers that have an astronomy, you know, program, let alone a whole nother group of dedicated volunteers that want to bring that to the community. So they do a star fest and they bring people from all over, and they put up their amateur telescopes in our fields once a year. And so if astronomy is something that you're interested in for one night or want to get more involved, that's another great group that utilizes Beaver Creek.
And what you've got going for you is lack of light.
It is great. Yeah. We just had a piece about the meteor showers that happened last weekend, and those people that got to come out also got to see the Northern Lights, and we're in a up cycle. I'm sure many people have seen the Northern Lights now in the last few years, and it's just been breathtaking. But that swell is like every 20 years, and so we're getting to see a bunch of it now, and we might not see it for another 20 years, at least at this rate. So it's nice to have friends in that group that also train some of our AmeriCorps staff and people to do programs here as well. Many of the youth group that still comes to the cabins across the road, we were originally the Eau Claire County Youth Camp. So there's 132 beds, a main lodge, a shower house. We are a camp for people who don't have a camp. Many YMCAs and scouts have their own facilities, but many church groups and youth groups come here and actually have their summer camp, or university club comes and has an overnight experience here, much like those sixth graders in the past. So we're a facility that does that, and if your stay happens to be during that season when the astronomy is open, you can come and visit, or you can set up an actual program from that group if their volunteers are available.
It's just great, great, great facility. Question from the audience.
Well, it's a question and an answer, maybe. My sister and I pick elderberries wild, and we picked them last summer. And we were approached by two young men on an ATV and a spray unit. And he said, when you get done picking there, we're coming down the other way, and we will be spraying the ditch to kill everything. So is there anything we can do about that? That's for the electric company. This is out by St. Bridget's.
There have been, there have been a number of instances where landowners, for example, I happen to be friends with a guy who has worked very hard with local government and with the power company for dealing with just that. I think it actually takes, at a local level, talking with local representatives, actually approaching and talking with the power companies. And he was able to work out a little something. He didn't get everything he wanted, but it was a lot better than what he had. So it's just something that I think any of us who are interested in this really need to get involved with our local politicians and local officials, because that's where those decisions are made.
Yeah, and I mean, it's difficult anytime we're dealing with conflicting interests, right? Yeah. I would love to eat some of those elderberries, but I know that the power companies have also done a really good job of replanting lupin, which is the host plant for Karner blue butterflies, right? And yeah. So if you look under a lot of these power lines, that's some of the few places that you actually see lupin grow. And so if there's things that are going to grow up into the vines and cut out power that we all need to survive as well, trying to work with your local municipalities, again, cutting down wildflowers and ditches is sometimes a visibility issue. We like wildlife, and then we don't like to hit deer. So there's always conflicts and how we work with them. I know that the local county highway department here is putting a suppressant down so that the grasses and flowers don't grow as much, so they have to mow less. I don't really know what the long-term effects on any of that is, but I know that there are different things being attempted constantly, and people want to see nature and Mother Nature thrive, right? Like, I don't think any of it is necessarily untoward, but how do we have those conversations with our local leaders and power companies to continue to try to make a place where we can live and thrive together, right? We want to see more butterflies. We want to eat those berries. We want to see the flowers and have those pollinators in our yards. And so I think Larry's approach is a good one.
Another question from the audience.
You guys have talked about so many amazing things, but could you guys talk about the green energy initiatives that you have here at the center? I know you guys have solar energy on the roof, and also, if you can, any green energy initiatives you plan on working toward in the future?
Yeah, great question. So when the Nature Center was built in 1984, there was a windmill out here. There was hot water solar that helped heat the building. The tree in the lobby, if you've been here or come visit, actually had a heat coil, and when off-peak energy was really, the disparity was really great, you could save a lot of money by heating at night. You would actually heat up the whole tree, and it would give off heat through the rest of the day. So there's some really innovative things even back into the 80s. Right now, solar is kind of the most efficient way to do that. We have buildings that have geothermal heat, but we did come up with a plan and then just happened to find a donor that supported that plan. And so we're 100% solar powered for all of our electrical needs here at Beaver Creek. We've got 143 panels on the Nature Center. We also have a great partnership with our local energy co-op, and they put a solar array in the community, and we bought into their solar array. And because we couldn't afford all of it, they also offered leases, and so we lease solar from them. So we own in a system, and we lease from a system. And so that all of our electrical needs are part of the we don't bank the energy, but we're generating all of our own electrical throughout a year. So that's exciting, and they helped us get a grant to put electrical vehicle charging stations in our parking lot. And so we have spent a lot of time just from a sustainability issue here at Beaver Creek. The costs of energy are real in our own homes and in any business or community. Yeah. And so if we can cut down on any of those energy costs, the focus on energy, switching all of our bulbs to LEDs, we were one of the first adopters of that. And so Beaver Creek, part of our mission, part of our strategic goals, is to be a community example, right? And show people that this can be done and that you don't have to have an electric car or do all these things. We have a we have a very robust Earth Week challenge where we encourage people to just turn off the lights, right? One of the best ways to not waste energy is to not use energy, right?
And so, and on that note, we're going to have to close.
Hey.
It was great talking with the three of you. And the Beaver Creek Reserve, Jeanette Kelly, Megan Giefer, and Eric Kiesler, our guests today. Great to have them with us on WPR News. And thank you very much.